Good morning, Patriots. Back again for some, new to others. Today, we have to start with our normal top of the hour bullet points. Bard's Fest is on the top of the hour. Tickets are available at bardsfest.com. You can cruise on over there to bardsfest.com or bardsfm/bardsfest. Either one will get you there. And you need to get your tickets. 26th to the 29th of August in St. Charles, Missouri. It's going to be the greatest revival in our modern history, if not the history of man. It is huge. It is going to be online and in presence, and you want to be there. This is literally all of us coming together to celebrate the glory of God, to humble ourselves before Him, and spend 4 days of celebration doing just that. This is splitting the heavens and bringing God into play in a big way. We need to get our nation back to that foundation of God under our feet, God at our back, and God under the foundation of all things we are. And until we do that, we are not going to reset anything in this country. You can talk all day about election integrity. You can talk about sovereignty. You can talk about liberty. But the principal issue is in the Declaration of Independence, and it states very clearly that we have unalienable rights given to us by our Creator, God. And unless we are willing to fight to get that back as a foundation of all things, we are never going to reset this nation accordingly. So Bard's Fest is that first major thrust. It's not just a rally. It's not a political rah-rah event. This is an event with some serial substance and some teeth behind it. It is God's event. We're stewarding this event into the world. So we need to get you out there. Want everybody to come together. Tickets are available at bardsfest.com or bardsfm.com/bardsfest. There's two event locations, indoor and outdoor. The outdoor is a festivity. There's a lot of other things going on there. There's events for kids. There's a carnival, kind of a carnival festivity area. Vendors. There's county by county breakout area. That's in the outdoor area. That also has a part of an indoor space. The other one is a more traditional sit-down venue. The one outdoors with indoor spaces also has daycare. So it's really geared towards families, bringing families together and everybody, but it's set up very nicely for families. The other event is more geared towards sitting down and listening to the event all day long. So bring families to both ones. Families are welcome both locations. Indoor, outdoor. Two events, one mission. God back in this country. Bardsfest.com. Head on over there. Get your tickets. On the 27th of August is Mike Lindell speaks, is when Mike Lindell speaks. He speaks at the indoor and the outdoor event. Part of the celebration of that day is what we call the Slipper Revolution. You want to get your My Slippers that day. It's a celebration of Mike Lindell. It's a celebration of stomping out evil. It's a celebration of the type of CEOs that we want to see in this country that put God and country first. We're raising up one company. MyPillow, as high as we can. And you can go over to MyPillow.com, get your slippers and all the other things, great products they offer. Use the Bards promo code, B-A-R-D-S. B-A-R-D-S, Bards promo code. They'll knock off all sorts of, give you all sorts of savings. And you can get great products. And I use their products. I completely endorse their products. I have their slippers. I have their pillows. I have their sheets. I have their towels. I have their comforter. And everybody tells me that their doggy beds are amazing, that the dogs love it. Even had somebody sent me something the other day that their dog wasn't using their doggy bed and they started to pick it up and the dog jumped on top of the doggy bed and started to growl. So apparently, dogs are pretty happy with my pillow as well. I just saw on our chat board that one of our mods has the mattress and says it's great. So there's nothing that they produce that isn't just top quality. So, and I mean this, if everything I've touched with theirs is great. So get on over to MyPillow.com. It's a great American company. We are literally raising up one company and we are going to announce the boycott of 7 at Bard's Fest. And it's going to be an aggressive boycott. When I say boycott, we're going to step away from these other 7 companies, these Luciferian agents, and we're never going back. So, tickets, bartsfest.com, and you get your tickets for the event. It's 4 days. You can be there 1 day, 2 day, 3 days. You can go to the indoor and the outdoor event, whatever you want to do, mix and match. And then mypillow.com. Great list of speakers. You'll see the speakers that are there. It's pretty amazing. It's truly an event of our lifetime. And then on the other little bit of news, make sure and open up an account at Clout Hub. That's free. We're going to be, we are now teaming with Clout Hub to provide the digital infrastructure and the digital social media services at Bard's Fest. We're going to be doing a lot of push on Clout Hub in the next 4 weeks. And then we're going to have some neat announcements to talk about at Clout Hub as we team together on some bigger projects this next year. So it's pretty exciting. So it's, they have an amazing platform. I was on it. I first went on it about 6 months ago and kind of stepped away from it because I wasn't real sure. They have really done some amazing build out. I talked to the CEO yesterday. They're all behind Bard's Fest. Here's how I see it. When they start talking about one of the groups or forums that they're building and the first all the forums that they're adding, and the first one on the list is Faith, I think that's kind of self-explanatory at that point where they sit. So get an account on Clout Hub. We already have the Bard's FM channel pinned, meaning it's created. There's nothing on it yet, but that'll be up by tomorrow. And tomorrow night we're having Dr. Eric Naputi on tomorrow night with me. We're going to discuss the new Expedition Coffee, which is going to be awesome. And tonight we have Pam Popper on, Dr. Pam Popper, another great patriot. And then tomorrow evening, well, this is a busy week. Tomorrow evening, I'm over on Red Pill 78 with Zach. Tune in there after the Bard's FM show. And then on Sunday night, I'm having Zach. Zach will be on the Expedition Cafe show. And Red Pill 78, Zach will be speaking at Bard's Fest as well. So it's a busy, busy time, busy week. Also, great call out to Mike Adams over at Brighteon. He's pushing Bard's Fest as well, so thank you. And I believe Clout Hub is going to start some advertisements for us here this next week. We've got a lot of things happening. Also, and I don't have the exact... I hear it's launching on Monday, but we'll find out. There's a radio station, a new talk radio station in St. Louis that's going to cover five state regions. They've set up new 50 megahertz tower, megahertz, broadcasting towers. Anyway, they cover a five-state region, and Bard's FM will air there four times a day. It's going to be, if you're familiar with Caravan to Midnight, they always have that slot at night. Well, Bard's FM is going to have those slots now. It's going to, on their new talk radio. So basically from 11 to 5 in the morning, we're going to be broadcasting these shows, and there'll be these shows rebroadcast over there. So that's going to be pretty awesome. That's going to be 4 days a week, two on Saturdays and two or three on Sunday. And I think we're getting the Sunday morning show. We're working out some details on that programming right now. But that's been a negotiation for about the last 2 months. So that's big news. And you're going to want to get, as soon as that goes live, I've got to get you some information on their social media, because we need to get over and like them and support them as much as possible. So I believe we call this Bard's Nation. We're literally going to recreate this country one beat at a time. I'm telling you right now, no more messing around. And that is really going to be the only way to take this nation back, is that we have to, one person at a time, one county at a time, one position at a time, we have to take it back. And I'm going to be honest with you, I truly mean what I'm going to say. I love a lot of these patriots out here, but I think that the BDADs, Bard's Digital Army Division Patriots, are the best. And not just because I'm massively biased, because I am. But because of the center point in which we come from. So Bard's Nation is taking it over. And we can be a nation within a nation. We are literally going to take over. It's going to be like all of North America is going to be controlled by Bard's Nation. And that's the insurgency, the real insurgency, is that BDADs take control in local and state and national politics and influence positions. And it's all, we all rally under the Bard's Nation banner to take back our individual countries. But what bridges us all is our love of God and Christ. And that's how we reset this thing. We can live in individual countries. And so the BDADs become the new insurgents to take back the world in the name of God. I like that. It's kind of a cool thing. So let's energize this Bard's Nation. And that begins by getting as many people as possible to Bard's Fest. And we are literally going to smack it down. We've got to put our foot down on this nonsense, because if we don't take it back, these Luciferian, they are literally Luciferian horrors, every one of them. Godless, lost, and can't even speak nicely. I mean, these people, I think half the reason they're angry is because somebody screwed with their gender. I mean, I mean that. I mean, wouldn't you? It's like, Johnny, you're going to be now known as Susie, and we cut your balls off. Oh, thank you. I think that could get somebody a little angry. You imagine growing up as a kid and then literally getting a snip and tuck, and then when you get older and you really start to realize what happened, it's like, wait a minute. I used to be a boy and now I'm a girl, but I'm not really a girl. I'm a boy and I've got to take hormones the rest of my life to make myself into a girl. I mean, that would be a little unstabilizing. And there's something deeper to this that they're not telling people, which is the fact that as they flip genders, they're shaking up the soul energy of the body. It's completely in chaos. They're putting the body in a constant state of chaos. And it is what creates this agitation and anger. And parents that do this, yeah, well, there's something called a millstone. You deserve it. And if your child comes up and becomes a serial killer someday, that's your fault. It's just horrible. All right, so this is my favorite sentence of the Declaration of Independence. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object devises a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Our duty, not just our right, but our duty to throw off such government. That is a powerful, powerful statement, and one that we need to honor in all things that we do. We cannot go through life meandering away, accepting these long lines of abuses and usurpations and whatever else they're doing to us. There comes a point we have to draw the line. And it's literally like I was talking about last night, which is we have to draw the line of David. We are facing a Goliath. We are reminded in the strength of David that it only takes one to stand boldly in the name of God, to stand in the gap and to crush this. And that's what our framers intended. They wouldn't have put it in the Declaration of Independence just for the pure sake of joy. And it's one of the reasons that our country is so hated, is because of two principal formations in which our country was built upon. One, God was put above all things, not a king like in England, some fake deity, but instead it was God that was put on the throne above us. All things in this country, we are to be humbled before Him. And that's moral law. That's who gives us the unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Nothing can take that away. The king couldn't take it away. That's part of the whole thing. They were coming from kings, setting up an experimental nation, a concept where God ruled over all things and all people were accountable to God and government was subordinate to the people. In that order, God, people, government. And government was a small footprint, not this cancer. I saw this interview, recent older, but like in the last 3 months before, apparently he committed suicide. Who knows? McAfee. Man, he's a trip. But anyway, he was making a good point. It's like 25% of our country is government now. That is not the way the founding fathers envisioned this. This was going to be a small footprint of what they would call Republican policies. That has nothing to do with parties, by the way. It has to do with the principles of sovereignty, liberty, personal accountability. Those are principles of a Republican government. Self-rule, self-governance, no dependency upon a king. And unlike the Democrats that are translate to something like communists, fascists, racists, whatever else they come up with. Oh, we need to throw in Luciferians because that's in their mix too. The Democrat-Republican model is a party issue. The concept in the Federalist paper of Republican government is a principle issue. So we are in a point right now where we have to make some hard decisions as where we want to go as a country. And that's going to center ourselves on whether we pivot back to God or whether we continue to wander in the desert. So today we're going to touch on Federalist Paper number 79, which is going to continue. It's a short paper today. It's going to continue on the discussion of the Judiciary Department, which is called literally the Judiciary Department Continued after our discussion yesterday of the judiciary. Federalist Paper number 79 will hopefully kind of close, I believe it closes out this discussion, but the point that it's important in the judiciary, as we learned yesterday, is the Founding Fathers were very aware of the potential corruption of the judicial branch. They were very aware of the fact that the judicial should not legislate from the bench, that instead they should just make decisions on laws. And that they were aware of the potential corruption of the people who were sitting on the bench, knowing that there was only a handful that were capable of doing that, of being objective to the law and constitutionally driven to the law. We have seen what has happened as the judiciary has been hijacked. And it's what we refer to as lawfare. This was executed brilliantly over the last 40 to 50 years as they have placed their people, the left and this globalist elite, have placed their people into the positions of judges, built up full firms of lawyers in a radicalized view of what the world should look like, representing supposedly, quote unquote, the Constitution, when all they're trying to do is subjugate and destroy the Constitution. The foolish thing about these people do, they just don't get it. And this is the biggest problem about the left, is they're short-sighted. They do not understand that once the elite win their revolutions, the first people they kill, cull, assassinate, remove, put into camps are those that help make the revolution possible. Lawyers will be on the top of their list, so will teachers. And they all sit here and go, oh, we want this great world. You hate capitalism. Go ahead and hate it and see what happens if you get what you want. Because when you get what you want, it's not going to be what you think. Stalin removed, I don't know how many millions of people he removed from his country, but he's a great example. So is Mao Zedong. The first thing they do is they cull out the elite and they get rid of them because the elite know what's going on. And they all these people become useful idiots. And that's the stupidity of the left, but whatever. We will win because we have God and we're going to stand boldly in that gap. So Federalist Paper number 79, the Judiciary Department Continued, which was originally published for McLean's edition of New York and was authored by Alexander Hamilton. We'll read that. To the people of the state of New York, next to preeminency in office, nothing can contribute more to the independence of the judges than a fixed provision for their support. The remark made in relation to the president is equally applicable here. In the general course of human nature, a power over man's subsistence amounts to a power over his will. By the way, that is a fantastic quote. A power over a man's subsistence amounts to a power over his will. And we can never hope to see realized in practice the complete separation of judicial from the legislative power in any system, which leaves the former dependent for pecuniary resources on the occasional grants of the latter. The enlightened friends of good government in every state have seen cause to lament the want of precise and explicit precautions in the state constitutions on this head. Some of these, indeed, have declared the permanent salaries should be established for the judges, but the experiment has in some instances shown that such expressions are not sufficiently definite to preclude the legislative evasions. Something still more positive and unequivocal has been advised to be requisite. The plan of the convention accordingly has provided that the judges of the United States shall, as stated times, receive for their services a compensation which shall not be dismissed during their continuance in office. In other words, they want to get them on a fixed salary. And this is always the balance and challenge that we have in governance and government, is that where do you draw the line between statesmanship of people serving their nation and people profiteering from it? Obviously, that quote is critical again, that a power over a man's subsistence amounts to a power over his will, so they need to be making a living, but what is enough? And this gets to the very principal flaw of our entire system, and for that matter, of every system ever devised by man, is that as we rise to power, the corruptibility of men and women is unbelievable. The obsession for power and greed overcomes the majority. Continuing, this, all circumstances considered, is the most eligible provision that could have been devised. It will readily be understood that the fluctuations in the value of money and in the states of society rendered a fixed rate compensation in the Constitution inadmissible. What might be extravagant today might in half a century become penurious and inadequate. It was therefore necessary to leave it to the direction of the legislature to vary its provisions in conformity to the variations of circumstances, yet under such restrictions as to put it out of the power of the body to change the condition of the individual for the worse. A man may then be sure of the ground upon which he stands and can never be deterred from his duty by the apprehension of being placed in a less eligible situation. The clause which has been quoted combines both advantages. The salaries of judicial officers may, from time to time, be altered as the occasion shall require, yet as never to lessen the allowance with which a particular judge comes into office in respect to him. It would be observed that a difference has been made by the convention between the compensation of the president and the judges. That of the former can neither be increased nor diminished. That of the latter can only be diminished. This probably arose from the difference in the duration of the respective office. As the president is to be elected with no more than 4 years, it can rarely happen that an adequate salary fixed at a commencement for that period will not continue to be such to its end. But when regard to the judges, who, if they behave properly, will be secured for their places for life, it may well happen, especially in the early stages of the government, that a stipend which would be very sufficient at its first appointment would become too small in the progress of their service. This provision for the support of the judges bears every mark of prudence and efficacy, and it may be safely affirmed that, together with the permanent tenure of their offices, it affords a better prospect for their independence than is discoverable in the constitutions of any states in regard to their own judges. This is, one, it's a very insightful paragraph to realize that the Founding Fathers understood very well that value and money may change. And that was dependent a great deal on the early stages of the country versus the latter stages and what wealth would look like, unknowing where wealth would be pinned. Remember, at this point in time, the United Kingdom still controlled, Great Britain still controlled much of the world economy. And we were a fledgling economy trying to find our roots in what we would, how we were going to pin our money. This was a lot of the fight early on that was invisible to the public. And that was the founding fathers' ability and need to try to find a way to underwrite currency, which they were doing through land and acquisitions of the West. That was also some of the principal treaty fights between the UK and America. And one could probably argue that the Battle of 1812, which is basically where the British came in and just did a scorched earth across our country, was a reminder of who not only was in power, but to keep the colonies, former colonies, in line, doing this kabuki theater dance of being an independent country as long as they didn't step out of place with the United Kingdom, primarily because of the ability to set money and to create a new currency that would challenge the British pound. So we've been in this fight continually for this freedom of this nation since its beginning. We made great strides with the forming of this government, great strides with the independence in structure and form, but we've never been fully free, which is hence one of the indicators we're learning more and more how deeply involved MI5 and MI6 were in the overthrowing of our elections in 2020. How deeply involved the Crown is, the Vatican is, in pushing this injection on this people. These are evil people. Evil of a level we cannot comprehend, that are willing to eradicate an entire civilization for their own benefit and joy. So we are in a very critical time in our history where we have to make, again, these hard decisions about where we're going to be and how we pivot this government back to where it was. And it's deeply corrupted. And unfortunately, a big part of this corruption is the judicial branch. The judiciary, as we have seen with this circus show that we put up with in Congress over these, you know, Blasley floored nonsense and Kavanaugh nomination and all these things, they put their own people in constantly, and they put up this circus act, scripted out, just like you saw with this January 6 hearings. Those hearings are delayed not because they were slow to come to about. It took them that much time to script out what this show was going to look like on TV, what they were going to use for their actors, how they were going to train people to cry, when they were going to cry on script. You literally are watching a movie, and that's what they're doing. By the way, there's a book called Tribes on the Hill. I can't think of the author right now. It's out of print, I believe. You probably can find it in PDF. It's a brilliant text, and it's an anthropologic look at the Congress and our government. It was written in the late 70s, early 80s. Tribes on the Hill basically told this exact story, just so we're clear. It is a story of the scripting of Congress, the way that things were literally moved, the real decision process was moved farther and farther behind the scenes so that people could not see what was really going on. And that in itself is worth everything to read and to understand. And Tribes on the Hill was written by J. McIver Weatherford. It's a great book. I'm just reading here. The U.S. Congress Rituals and Realities. It was written, let's see if I can, written, no, I was wrong on the date. It was written in 1985. It was published. A great book, and one you should read. I have, and it's, if you can get a copy of it, it's on Kindle. Expensive on Kindle, $25. It's got an ISBN number, so you probably can, if you search around, probably find it on PDF on the web. Another, again, just a great text. The precautions, continuing with the Federalist Papers, the precautions of their responsibility are compromised in the article respecting impeachments. They are liable to be impeached for malconduct by the House of Representatives and tried by the Senate if convicted, may be dismissed from office and disqualified for holding any other. This is the only provision on the point which is consistent with the necessary independence of the judicial character and is the only one which we find in our own Constitution in respect to our own judges. All of these things are predicated by a House of Representatives and a Senate that is not owned and controlled by and blackmailed by foreign intelligence agents or foreign interests or lobbyists or domestic intelligence agents. And that's where all of this works when you strip away the puppet masters. But unfortunately, we are in a place where so much of our government is controlled by foreign agents, meaning foreign to the people, that there's nothing logical that happens anymore. It all happens for their interest. And we witness this show going on and we ask ourselves, what's going on? The only way to clean this is to reset this. It literally has to be, we have to clean the deck. Continuing with the Federalist Paper, the want of a provision for removing the judges on account of inability has been subject to complaint. But all considerate men will be sensible that such a provision would either not be practiced upon or would be more liable to abuse than calculated to answer any good purpose. The menstruation of the faculties of the mind has, I believe, no place in the catalog of known arts. Any attempt to fix the boundary between the regions of ability and inability would much oftener give scope to personal and party attachments and enmities than advance the interest of justice or the public good. The result, except in the case of insanity, must for the most part be arbitrary, and insanity, without any formal or expressive provision, may be safely pronounced to be virtual and virtual disqualification. Essentially, what has happened in the judiciary in this point is they're trying to give the judges as much latitude and freedom to operate without being punished by the House or the Senate or the executive. And it's a delicate balance because they've already admitted in the previous paper, which was 78, that there's only a few men that can handle holding the bench. And yet when you look at 400 or whatever number of judges, I think there's about 800 in the federal system. That's a lot of judges and a lot of lawyers that have to become judges. So finding those that are truly constitutional and not corrupted as they are today is a really big challenge. And we've seen already that in spite of President Trump's attempt to reset the bench in a constitutional way, there was a limitation to that because even some of the sources he was using, they were corrupted by this sort of derelict view of the Constitution. Constitutional law in its purest form really is contrary to the maritime law principle of the bar. And so we should really be a common law country. And that would solve a lot of our problems to get rid of this sort of maritime and legalist law that's being used against us right now. But that's outside of the discussion of these papers. They're trying to set a format where judges and judiciary can operate without the threat of reprisal from the others. So they're trying to create them outside the politics, give them a salary base that gives them enough stability over time. And of course, that all raises the debate of what's the value of the time. You imagine the favor that some would try to gain by boosting the judge's salary. Or if a judge then is, because he's on the bench, if he loses interest in serving the nation and serving the people, and he's on a fixed salary, what's he going to do? Well, I'll try to pick up some more money. The whole cultural system that we're around, this material desire, is such a place that people want more and more for themselves. And they lose the purpose of why they serve. Lifetime positions are huge. And I don't know that our system can handle lifetime positions anymore. Remember, the other big issue in all of this, and it is so massive and so fundamental in the way our Constitution was written, what was the lifespan of people? People live to about 55 years old on the average. So a lifetime position, if you were a judge of senior caliber, maybe 30 years or 35 years, or I should say a lawyer, and you were put on the bench for 20 years, that was that's it, and then you're dead. Today, if you're put into the bench and you say you're 45 or 50 years old, you might be there for 40 or 50 years. That's a problem, because over the span of time and how things change, judges can't even keep pace with the technology shifts and the way culture and society shift. This is we are an agrarian culture at this time, primarily with an innovation culture emerging to be an industrial nation. Today, we are a high-tech culture. And that point in time, change happens over years. Today, change happens over days and months. And the technology leaps that we're making is leaving full generations behind. So a judge that's on the bench that got there, say, in the 90s, today is out of touch, most likely, with the technology innovations that this generation is creating. These are huge problems. So last paragraph. The Constitution of New York, to avoid investigations that must forever be vague and dangerous, has taken a particular age as the criterion of inability. No man can be a judge beyond 60. I believe there are a few at present who do not disapprove of this provision. There is no station in relation to which it is less proper than to that of a judge. The deliberating and comparing faculties generally preserve their strength much beyond that period in men and who survive it. And when, in addition to the circumstances, we consider how few there are who outlive the season of intellectual vigor, and how improbable it is that any considerable portion of the bench, whether more or less numerous, should be in such a situation at the same time, we shall be ready to conclude that limitations of this sort have little to recommend them. In a republic where fortunes are not affluent and pensions are not expedient, the dismission of men from stations in which they have served their country long and usefully, on which they depend for substance, and from which it will be too late to resort to any other occupation for a livelihood, ought to have some better apology to humanity than is to be found in the imaginary danger of superannuated bench. This is a very interesting insight into their thinking as we conclude this paper, and it goes right to what we are talking about. Notice that in this sentence, in a republic where fortunes are not affluent, okay, so we're talking about a society where they see in a republic where there is a more frugal way of living overall. Pensions are not expedient. People weren't getting pensions from the government. So the government was not a lifetime career. It was a service to the people. Huge difference of where we are today. The dismission of men from stations in which they have served their country long and usefully, on which they depend for subsistence, very critical, where the men in the positions they have taken, this has become their job after years, with no pension. Remind yourself, no pension. Not like today where you work in the federal government. You literally, this is one of the big scams going. You go in the military at 18. You spend 20 years. You get out when you're 38. Then you flip into another government position. At 20 years in the military, you now get a pension. Okay? And you're going to get a retirement package after 20 years. Then you're going to flip into government service at 38, so you're still pretty young, because you're going to use the military to get your education. You're going to leave the military with a master's or PhD from the appropriate schools necessary to get a government position. You now jump into a government position, USAID, Homeland Security, FBI, you name it. And then you work for another 20 years, so you're 58, and you pull a double pension, a double retirement. That was not part of the design of the republic. It was never intended that the government would become a way to make a living and prosper that way. Okay. The other part about this is, again, is lifespan, because lifespan ended most of the time at around 55 at latest. So with these understandings, all of these things were put in place based on a limited government, very limited government, a government that was not based on benefits, but based on service to nation and to the people and to the republic, and a much more limited lifespan. So people weren't living to, not that people didn't, but the average person didn't live to 80. Huge differences. And this is what we have to readdress now as we reset this nation. As we set the new republic in place, these sorts of limitations have to be put before us. Hence, term limits in many forms, including the judiciary, I would argue. And if we're going to continue with this idea of pensions, if that's what we're going to do, then there has to be a limitation on your service to government. You can't double dip. And there has to be some limitation on what that means as far as getting a pension. Our objective really needs to be ensuring that there is a current and relative government that represents the people. And that's a hard issue where we are right now, because these places are blocked. You have people that have been in there for 30 and 40 years. This is stupid. It was never intended that way. And we know that they're there not because they're popular, but because of one of two things. Either it's convenient for people to vote the same person in because they don't want to think about who should be there instead, and or the elections were rigged, which is probably both. So the other problem we face on a much broader scale is our founding fathers weren't confronted with some of the housing issues that we have now. Government has become so massive. D.C. has become one of the big profit centers in the world. Here's one for you. McLean, which is where the CIA is, or right on the edge of where the CIA is. Okay, that's just I'll call it for sake of talking, a suburb of D.C. You tell me how McLean ends up being one of the wealthiest districts in the entire United States when all of it, 99% of what goes on in McLean is taxpayer funded. Whether it's defense spending, whether it's intelligence spending, McLean, and the mall over there, there's two malls. If you've never been there, McLean has this one very well-known mall in the area. One side of the mall is for the people. The other side of the mall is for the wealthy, literally. There's a Ritz-Carlton that's attached to the wealthy side of the mall, and then across the street is the main mall. In the Ritz-Carlton mall are things like Mont Blanc, a watch store where the average watch price is about $5,000. They have Maseratis, they have Lamborghinis, Porsches on display every day. It's a completely separate world. And it's built there specifically for the amount of people that come in there and spend this wealth of money. Much of it is being paid by your taxpayer dollars for these foreign government and dignitaries to come in. Okay, so this is a very real issue of how our taxpayer dollars are being used and wasted. And it's all this profiteering from the position of being in public service. That was never part of a Republican government. You did not profit from being in public service. You profited by creating a business and being successful on your own. And that took some ingenuity and some innovation and took a lot of hard work. So this perspective on government has to change. That adds to another problem, because right now, one of the areas that they capture people very quickly on is when you get somebody new into office, like a new House representative or a new senator, they have to cover their costs of housing. DC's housing is outrageous. And the salary on which they're given as a senator or a House representative isn't sufficient to be able to get a decent house. I was part of a campaign on the fringe. I mean, we did some support for him. It was his main work. A person that got into DC back in 2016, and I went and saw him at his office after he was elected. And it was interesting to learn, because he was out at that day. I met his aide, and great, great group. He didn't have enough money for a house. He was sleeping on a mattress in his provided office for as a representative. So how they rope you in is they get you there, and then you don't have the money, and you're not going to get paid usually for 90 days. So if a common person decides to run for House and you get elected, unless you have the money to support yourself, you will not get money for probably 90 days. That's something else we have. These are the kind of the granular things that we have to start looking at in resetting this government. In my opinion, every single House member of the House should be provided a house like the military provides its officers. The same with the Senate. That these houses should be a mutual control between the state and the federal. That these houses should have you have to live in those houses. You can have maybe a choice of if you have a big family or small family. And those are that sort of range. And that these houses should carry a certain flavor of the state. This is my opinion. To maintain that sort of state uniqueness. But that you aren't allowed to go out and get whatever you want in a house. You're given a fixed housing. That to me seems logical. Because it's there that we are then have a control element of who can influence you. It goes back to that fantastic quote here in today's paper, a power over a man's subsistence amounts to a power over his will. If they can control his subsistence, they can control him. So that's some of these, again, these things we have to put on the table to discuss, because it's these vulnerable points that we have to deal with. All right, Patriots, that's it for today. Let's close with a prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time in which we come together, a time to be blessed, a time to reflect, a time to learn, a time to elevate our knowledge into not just what was intended, but what is, as we work diligently every day to reset this nation truly on the words, "In God we trust." Lord, we ask that you'll guide us and protect us in all we do to help reset this nation in your true glory, as intended by our framers. That you rest above all things in this nation, and that we humble ourselves before you. And we say these things in Christ Jesus' name. Amen. So, Patriots, have a very blessed day. I will be back this evening with an interview with Pam Popper. It's great, Dr. Pam Popper. So until then, or until the next time, God bless, and out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made. Therefore, they can be solved by man. And man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again.
Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward, and so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. ask what you can do for your country.
Has waited thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one, to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. We push, we climb, we never give in. We become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist. We pray, we stand. We live by the words, "In God we trust." We fear nothing. We are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.